Welcome to episode 114 of McChesney Unchained here at DNVR. Make sure you get down to the DNVR bar down off of Colfax. It is rocking every single night. If you've seen it on social media at DNVR_sports on Twitter and on Instagram, it has been absolutely booming. The Avs play tonight. The Nuggets have been on. They shut the door on Portland last night. That place is absolutely rocking. I can't wait to go down and watch a game. It's packed. Get there early. It's so awesome to be able to say that again. But like I said, this is episode 114 of McChesney Unchained, coming to you from down here at 60 Football Academy at the lab. We're doing this over Zoom before we get back in studio down there at DNVR. We're going to talk about a lot of different stuff today. The NBA playoffs, talk about LeBron James and his greatness, and or the Nuggets closing out Portland in six. The great Willie Anderson, a 13-year vet with Cincinnati and Baltimore, is going to join us later in the show to talk about NFL offensive line play and development and 18 games, the college game, how it translates and so much more, as Willie works with so many guys down in Atlanta at his lineman academy, and a guy who's going to be a Hall of Famer here very shortly. The great Willie Anderson will join us. First and foremost, though, we want to give thanks to our friends at DraftKings and all that they do. The title sponsor here for McChesney Unchained on DNVR. DraftKings hit for me again last night. I took the over and the Nuggets. I put nice 300 on it, and boom! We had a nice night last night at the McChesney house watching the Nuggets close out Portland and go with the over. And it's my favorite sports book for a reason. It's also America's top rated sports book. I love using the DraftKings sports book. It's easy. You always get your money. It goes straight into your account. When you hit the button, there's never any, you know, qualms or conversation about who you paid or who's paying who. They do a great job. All the playoff games that you're seeing, the Avs, all the hockey games, all the basketball games, it's all there. You can bet going forward in the NFL. I took Cleveland to win their division at like plus 250 or something. So there's a ton of different opportunities on DraftKings to go out and make some money. Keep in mind that the DraftKings Sportsbook app is putting you courtside this week with a chance to turn $1 into $100 in site credits. You can pick any basketball team that's still in contention. Bet $1. If that team wins, you make $100. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable, and you can deposit, withdraw your funds at the convenience. Remember to download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the promo code DNVR when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free credits. Bet on one basketball team to win of your choice, and if they win, you can claim $100 on that $1 bet. The promo code is DNVR for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older. Colorado only. New customers only. Wager paid out in size credits. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Do you have a gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Thanks to DraftKings for all they do. Excited about the future bets I'm going to be winning. All right, so let's jump into the NBA here before we bring the great Willie Anderson on a little bit later in the show to talk about OL play. And my man that produces this show, that makes the big guy sound so good, it is, I don't know if I've ever met anybody more knowledgeable about the NBA and its history and your Denver Nuggets than my man Adam Mares, who's joining us here on DNVR episode 114. Not only is he producing the greatness, but he's adding to it. Adam, how you doing today, brother, and how the hell are you?
Good, man. I'm good to be a guest on the show. Always sitting silently in the background. Now I get to hop on and wrap it up with you.
All right. So first of all, thanks for coming on the show. Hey, how do they get a hold of you on Twitter? It's a great follow. You can get a ton of information, not only about DNVR, the bar off of Colfax down there, but also primarily about the NBA and the Denver Nuggets.
Well, the best thing people can do is become DNVR members. They can watch my film studies over on thednvr.com. After every playoff game, I've been breaking down deep dive like you do. You know, like the film studies you do with football. I'm doing that same stuff for the Nuggets. So they can check out thednvr.com, become members. You know all that.
All right. Well, definitely do that. You're not going to get more knowledge than what Adam can bring to the table, especially after the Nuggets go and wrap up Portland in six in Portland. I didn't hear one person. And look, we were texting back and forth. We were both super concerned about this, thought it was going to go seven. I thought Damian Lillard would definitely do what Damian Lillard does. The game five performance from that cat, the double nickel, was absolutely nuts. But look, I'm a Nugget fan. This is a Nugget town. They advance again, now in six, not having to go game seven like they did last year with their two playoff wins. What about this team impresses you the most, especially after losing a bona fide superstar like Jamal Murray?
Man, so this is the era in the NBA of super teams and off-season chaos. Every off-season, new teams form, and then you're around for one, maybe 2 years if you're lucky, and then you move on. I like it. I see that there. Look at that. But the Nuggets are a rarity in that this has been a slow build. This is a true team that has come through the ranks. These guys have had to build chemistry, trust, continuity, experience, all of those things step by step. And that's what I think makes them so special. You lose Jamal Murray, you lose Will Barton, but what you didn't lose was the culture that they had built, the toughness they had built, the resolve, all of those things that were forged, not just from a couple of tough games or a big month, but over years, a process. And very few teams in the NBA have that these days. And I think that's why Denver now, you've seen them come through in so many big games over, not just this season, but over last season as well. And that's why I think they keep surprising everybody.
So the thing that I love about the Nuggets so much is that resolve that you're speaking of. Like, Jamal Murray gets hurt, most teams, most franchises, most fan bases will probably be like, oh, well, great year. We'll see what we can do in the playoffs. We're not expecting much. The expectations for me went higher, in my opinion. Like, I'm looking at, like, we've got the MVP, Nikola Jokic, who's, well, we're going to talk about him in a minute, but I'm constantly amazed by this guy.
Yeah.
It's giving the Nuggets an opportunity to have real depth next year in the backcourt, an issue that's been a massive problem in Denver for a lot of years. And they're doing it without one of their top players, which is forcing Michael Porter Jr. to take that role as a true two.
Yeah.
Usually when you lose a guy like a bona fide superstar like Murray in any sport, your season is a wreck.
Yeah.
Why is it? Is it Coach Malone? Is it Jokic? Is it just the framework, like you said, the resolve of a great team? But I think Denver, if they're the three seed this year without him, the sky's the limit next year with an aging Laker team that can't get their head out of their ass. I mean, good Lord, I'm so excited about the future.
Even this year, though, man, I mean, you look at it, the Lakers are out. You know, there's teams, you look at the Clippers, they might be out tonight. Like, there's no – you most there's a team that you're, like, looking at and you're like, okay, that's the best team, everybody's chasing them. At least out West, that team doesn't exist anymore. So why not this year, even as shorthanded as they are? But, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to Jokic. You asked about the resolve. You know, he's a really tough dude. There's a reason – you look at the final four teams last year in the playoffs, in the bubble, that difficult bubble stretch that everybody – you know, you're inside that bubble for months and months. Mentally, it wore on teams. Miami, they're out of the playoffs. Lakers, out of the playoffs. Boston Celtics, out of the playoffs. Nuggets, the only team still standing. And by the way, their star, Jokic, the only guy that played every single game on either of those teams. He played all 72 games. So I just think it's this mental and physical toughness with this team that says, you know what, whatever the challenges are, would just rise to them. And they've done it for now three and a half seasons, going back to when they missed the playoffs, pushed it all the way to game 82 and then lost in overtime. They're a team that has just shown resolve, and it's one of their foundational traits. And what's cool about it is it's undeniable. I'm not just saying this because I'm the homer and people are like, all right, everybody thinks their team's tough. No, everybody around the league, covering the league, knows Denver is a special breed of mentally tough.
Absolutely tough as nails. And look, the great Adam Mares joins us here on episode 114 of McChesney Unchained. Make sure you go to dnvr.com and subscribe and watch all of his breakdowns for the Nuggets there. He does a great job covering this basketball team. And DNVR, we're, you know, the beauty of DNVR, in my opinion, and why I love being associated with such a great company, is we're not sitting around being homers. We're not just agreeing to agree. We actually have independent thoughts, and there's a lot of, you know, conversation in that building that the franchise would probably frown on. But again, as fans and as media members, it's our job to give our opinion, not necessarily just agree. That said, this Michael Malone isn't the right coach bullshit that I hear on the radio. It's like the narrative that the fan pushes, and James Merrillat, who takes everything, and right, so on and so forth. I think it's fucking ridiculous, personally, brother. I got to get your opinion on this. Michael Malone has done an incredible job. He just keeps making the right decisions. And with all the things that are stacked against that team and that guy, for them to be in this position, hat off, coach. Yeah.
Man, it's funny because First of all, you played professionally. You've had a lot of coaches. I am sure you have had coaches that you felt like genuinely cared about each player and trusted and instilled confidence. And I'm sure you had coaches that did not. And I'll tell you, it is so rare in the NBA for an entire locker room to like the coach. It is so rare. You get the star likes him and some of the role players like him. Austin Rivers, when he joined the team in the final month of the season because Denver was so depleted, is the number one thing he said when he talked about his team. He said, I've never seen anything like this. Everybody rides for Michael Malone. Like, everybody on the team just gets in line and appreciates him, and he has their back. And that's why you could throw in an Austin Rivers, a Marcus Howard, who's on a two-way contract, a rookie, 5'9", and he can go out there and shoot 60% from the three-point line in a playoff series when he's never been there. And I think it's because Michael Malone just gets that part of it. NBA coaches are different from NFL coaches in a lot of ways. I think Michael Malone is more like an NFL coach than anybody else in the NBA. He's a drill sergeant. He's a no excuses, hard ass, tough, intense guy, but he's also, it's tough love. And I think that underlying love part, everybody on that team knows, like, hey man, he's got my back. He might be benching me. He might be screaming at me, but he's got my back. And that's just so, that's such a tight line to walk in the NBA, being tough, but having guys know you still care about him. And Malone, one of very few coaches in the NBA that's able to walk that line.
And I love it. And that same drills instructor mentality, because I tell my guys here at 6-0 all the time, if I'm not on your ass, that's bad for you. Yep. I'm on your ass because I think you can play and the potential is through the roof. And if everybody does what they're supposed to do, the sky's the limit on how good we can be. All right. So I hope Malone is the coach here for years to come. I think the foundation here with this next guy we're going to talk about, Michael Porter Jr. is awesome. Jamal Murray is awesome. I love them. They're great. I love the addition of Gordon. He's been a defensive stopper and good on the boards and a guy that can go out and play the perimeter, but can also body up a 4 or 5 in the post. So
he's tough, man. He's strong.
He's been awesome. Austin Rivers off the sofa to 25 points and winning playoff games. I love it. But Jokic, the MVP of this league, I haven't seen the pass the other night to the corner in the second overtime to Porter over his shoulder with the double team on him was one of the most incredible passes I've ever seen. Now, LeBron James is a very unselfish player, but I think he's unselfish to the point of me yelling at the TV, just shoot the ball. Jokic is unselfish, and he seems to pick his spots perfectly. So how can he be – I guess my question is, is he really playing basketball, or is he just setting the tone? Like, it seems like he's just like out there orchestrating his masterpiece damn near every night. I think he can still get better too, and that is scary for the National Basketball Association.
No question he can get better, man. He's 26 years old, and he made a big leap this year. He's going to keep doing it. I mean, he just got his body in this type of shape for the first time ever, and I think, you know, by all accounts, he's committed to continuing that sort of process. And you mentioned LeBron James unselfish. Like, yeah, LeBron and the players of his type, James Harden, even Luka Doncic, those guys are passers, you know, scorers and passers. And people look at that and say that's unselfish. What makes Jokic a whole different type of unselfish is you watch that first quarter, Michael Porter Jr. is going off 21 points in the first quarter. What does Jokic do? He says, sweet, I'm going to keep giving him the ball. I don't need the assist. I don't need to be involved in this. If he has it going, I will completely step back. And that's something that even LeBron James types rarely do. It's usually like, okay, this guy's going, I'm going to run a pick and roll and get him the kick out, or I'm going to get him this. Jokic just said, sweet, I get to take the first quarter off. And that means I'm going to be ready for the fourth quarter even more, which is exactly what happened. Jokic got to coast in the first half because of Michael Porter. And in the second half, 27 points to close the door on Portland.
All right, so he's the MVP, first MVP in Nugget history. That's incredible. Coach Malone, I think, should be in running for Coach of the Year. We'll see what happens there. I'm looking at the West right now. The Jazz advance over a tough Memphis team. John Moran's incredible. Hopefully the Mavs can close out the Clippers, just because I don't really like the Clippers, but I'm not really worried about either of those two. I think that they would both give Denver a good run, but those guys got to get through Utah. The Suns and what they did to the Lakers, and I think that the Lakers were beat before they even started last night because they're pretty demoralized and Davis isn't there. But if I'm looking at this preseason and I'm like, okay, even if we lose Jamal Murray, we've got to beat Utah, Dallas or the Clippers or the Suns to get to the finals after last year's, you know, the Western Conference Finals run. is there a better situation for Denver than what they're in right now? I mean, I'm expecting the Denver Nuggets to be in the NBA Finals, bro. Are you in the same mindset?
Well, I think Utah is the favorites out West. I mean, they're a really good team. They retooled a little bit in their front court specifically to be able to guard Jokic should they have to go up against him, bringing in Derek Favors. That'll be a big move. I think they're probably the favorite for a reason. Phoenix is probably the second favorite. When you just talk about, like, in a vacuum, who has the talent, there's a reason they're the number two seed. But the one thing I'll say that we learned in this Portland series, you got to have a lot of guys. When you go into a series, you usually talk about, okay, who's the best player and how do you stop him? We're going into every series left on the table and saying, Jokic is the best player. How does Phoenix stop him? And then you get to Devin Booker and Chris Paul and everybody else. Yep. And right now, if you look at, you know, Phoenix Suns coming up, they have a very good young center in DeAndre Ayton. They don't have anybody behind him, though. And it makes you wonder, this is what happened to Portland. Nurkic, he did a good job against Jokic. But not once bad. He fouled out every game like he did, they had nobody else to throw at him, and Jokic just feasted. So I wonder if the same things will happen to the Suns.
All right, so looking at that series, Suns, Nuggets, I'd expect it to go 6 or 7. I think it's going to be a really competitive, hard-nosed series. Chris Paul already said today that he's not going to take the team option, so he'll hit free agency, even if he does stay in Phoenix.
Right.
That's really the bugaboo here, but that was the same with me with Portland, is how are we going to deal with McCullough and Lillard with our depleted backcourt? But again, like we said at the beginning of the interview here, I don't necessarily look at it depleted anymore. I think they've got a lot of experience and some depth and a lot of guys that can play. And when given the opportunity, they showed out. So, yes, Chris Paul's a floor general. Yes, Chris Paul has really elevated the play of Devin Booker. Yes, Chris Paul makes good decisions. But I think that the fact that he's being anointed as this difference maker in the series, like Chris Paul's going to be the guy that makes the difference, I think that's going to motivate Austin Rivers, and it's going to motivate Capazzo. It's going to motivate Michael Malone to put his guys in position to really take advantage of Chris Paul's age and that. And then Jokic on top of it, like you said, he should be the focal point in here, not Chris Paul. So the motivation for Denver to go out and really stomp Phoenix is there, even if the rivalry isn't built up there. So in your opinion, are these the two? I mean, Utah's good, yes, but I don't see Donovan Mitchell staying there for very long. He doesn't really like Utah very much. Do you think Phoenix and Denver are the two up-and-coming teams in the West that are really going to be at each other's neck for years to come? Phoenix is pretty homegrown.
Yeah, they are, but you mentioned Chris Paul. I don't know if he's back, and he's a big piece of that team. I think the other team you look at out West, if you think long-term, you've got to look at Dallas and Luka. I mean, Luka's even younger than Jokic, 22 years old, and he is an MVP caliber type player, and they're only getting started. So it's funny. This offseason has really been about the next wave of player, Trae Young, Luka Doncic, even Giannis. And I wonder, this is the year of the international player. You look at who's left in the playoffs right now. You got Jokic, you got Gobert, you've got Giannis, you got Luka, you know, even Joel Embiid on the other side of the bracket. You know, you've got a bunch of European players. And I wonder if it's a little bit weird because we always think of LeBron and so, you know, Steph and this or that. But the next wave of superstar in the NBA is international. It's the true growth of the sport as a global sport. And it'll be interesting to watch that.
So this last question here, Adam, before we get you out of here on episode 114, McChesney Unchained, and thank you so much for doing this. As Willie joins us, Willie, just hold on. We'll talk about pass setting here in a minute. Going to LeBron, okay? LeBron James accomplished is incredible. I mean, he's been awesome. No one's debating that. He got beat in the first round for the first time in his career. That sucks. Davis wasn't there. It is what it is. The international game, like you just said, Jordan played against domestic talent. LeBron's playing against international talent and domestic talent. Do you think last night and the walk-off with 5 minutes left in the game before where they got hammered by 30, do you think it puts any taint and stain on LeBron at all? Because, look, LeBron is more Magic Johnson to me and like just an unbelievable talent that can facilitate and play defense, run the point. And yeah, he's got a good shot, but not a great one. He's not just a pure scorer, even though he can. Where Kobe and Magic and Michael are more comparable, in my opinion, in that regard. So I guess my question to you is, is this the beginning of the end for LeBron James, or does he come back next year with a fury and at almost 40 years old, getting a CJ McCollum, getting a Damian Lillard, getting one of these guys out here that they may need in LA to go win another title? Let's get you out of here on that one, Adam.
Well, I think, you know, LeBron made the finals for 10 years straight. So, I mean, he has his place in NBA history, I think, is solid. And people will always debate to the end of days. Is it Jordan? Is it LeBron? Is it Wilt? Is it Kareem? I mean, there's a lot of guys you could throw in there. And you can't take anything from them there. The only thing whenever people ask me about that, you know, and I was old enough to watch Jordan and see his career, Jordan is the best competitor, I think, that we've ever seen. And that's no knock on LeBron. I think he's the best competitor we've seen across sports. I mean, he is a true, you know, he wrote the book on this sort of Mamba mentality. He created Mamba mentality before Kobe put a name to it. And I think that, you know, I think that's one thing that separates him. But at the same time, LeBron, at his absolute peak, really didn't have weaknesses on the offensive end, didn't have weaknesses on the defensive end. 6'9", 265 pounds of sheer muscle and athleticism. So his place is set. The Lakers, though, look, man, this is 2 out of 3 years LeBron has broken down midway through the season. 2 out of 3 years. And we just know, man, this is how it goes in sports. You start, you get a little bit older, and it's not the big injuries. Little things just kind of start happening, and it's just – now, if he's healthy and in the playoffs and Anthony Davis is healthy, that team would have been favorites. But the odds of them both being healthy now, when you talk about him being 36, next year 37 years old, the odds of him being healthy for a full season and at the right times, just they just go down and down. And we'll see what happens with him.
Does he need to go back to the East?
Man, I'll tell you what, when you're in Los Angeles, you get everybody. So, you know, we'll see what happens this summer. Maybe they get Chris Paul and they add another Hall of Famer to their team or something like that. But
so the Lakers might actually get Chris Paul this time without the NBA stepping in and be like, NBA, Chris Paul for you.
They might have to step in, man. You know, but I will say this, man, the East, there's some good teams out there right now, but the West for 20 years has had first round. You don't get the first round off. You're not playing the Atlanta Hawks in the first round or whatever, Orlando Magic. The West, every round, every series out West in the first round this year and for the last 20 years has been a battle, and that's just what makes it different.
Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show, not only producing every episode of McChesney Unchained, but being so knowledgeable today, talking about the NBA and so much more. I'm really excited about the Nuggets moving forward. And obviously, we both hope that they take care of the Suns and go to the Western Conference Finals again. Everybody, remember to check out Adam on DNVR.com and download all of his film breakdowns and give him a good follow on Twitter. He's awesome. The information is flowing, to say the least. And get down to DNVR tonight. Watch the Avs take care of Vegas. Yeah. And then the Nuggets start their next series against Phoenix here when Dallas and the Clippers wrap. Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show, brother. And enjoy producing the rest, as Willie and I discuss. Thank you, bro.
The background. Yeah, for sure.
And episode 114 rolls here on McChesney Unchained on DNVR. Make sure you go to dnvr.com and check everything out. Big thanks to Adam Morris for coming on the show and talking about the NBA. Make sure you go check out all the stone breakdowns. Get your ass down to DNVR this evening to watch the Avs take care of the Knights in Game 3. And then, obviously, the Nuggets will be taking on the Suns, and we'll be down there supporting them. We bring on NFL great Willie Anderson, tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals, played from 1996 to 2007, was the 10th overall pick, 13-year NFL vet. He runs the Willie Anderson Lineman Academy down in Atlanta and works with guys very similar to what I do up here in Denver. Willie is one of the best linemen I've ever seen play at his position, obviously, but just listen to this number before we start talking shop. Willie Anderson faced 9 of the 11 all-time sack leaders while he played. So it's just some bad-ass dudes off the edge. He allowed 1 sack to Bruce Smith as a rookie. To those 9. Just saying. The man might know what he's talking about a little bit. So, Willie, thanks for coming on the show, brother. Welcome to McChesney Unchained and taking some time out of your day. And how are you?
I'm good, bro, man. Thanks for having me on here, dog.
Yeah, man. And first and foremost, yeah, you're down 50 pounds. You're looking good, man, out there busting your ass. So, I wanted to tip the cap of you to you on that one. On all of us big guys, the only way we're going to stay alive for very long is to lose that weight. So tip of the cap to you, brother. Keep it up.
No doubt.
All right. So first and foremost, you're a Laker fan. We were texting yesterday. Mm-hmm. I thought that the Lakers would be able to pull out game 6. No way LeBron would go out in 6 games, but it did end up happening. We just had Adam talking about the NBA on. He's the insider down there at DNVR. I wanted to get your thoughts on LeBron and the Lakers and just the NBA playoffs up to this point, as I know you're a huge fan.
I think everything Adam said was correct. I mean, as a Lakers fan, I've been a Lakers fan since 1987. You know, I'm from Mobile, Alabama, and we don't have a pro team, NFL or NBA. And the first team that I saw play in 87, I was 12 years old, was Magic Johnson, the Lakers. Diehard Lakers fan, you know, early on in my career, early on in LeBron's career, I wasn't the biggest LeBron fan because I'm 45 years old. So I grew up, you know, pro Jordan. And, and back then, 10 years ago, it was either you love Jordan, hate LeBron, you couldn't love them both. But as LeBron's gotten older, I've definitely come to respect LeBron's game, even while in Cleveland. So I was ecstatic when he came to L.A. But I do think it's getting near the end. I think last night kind of showed that. I mean, and he's played so long. I mean, if you guys remember Kobe's career at the end, Kobe had like three straight seasons of season-ending injuries. And Kobe took care of himself just as well as anybody. So with LeBron at this stage right here, he needs other players. I mean, he has to. Like, we definitely need a dominant two guard. I think the role of LeBron dominating the basketball, it kind of deterred guys in the past from wanting to come play with him, because guys, you know, if you have a dominant two guard or a dominant point guard, they want the ball in their hands. And I knew last season that style would work for 1 year with LeBron, but he has to come to the point right now where he has to have better players. It sounds crazy. Just as good or better players around him at this stage of his career. I mean, he's 36 years old, what, 17, 18 seasons? I mean, damn, Kobe played 20, and at 17, Kobe was not Kobe anymore. So what LeBron is doing now is crazy still athletically, but we need other guys. I mean, you know, and what happened with AD is kind of what we all worried about AD when he got here, because he stayed, great player, top five guy, but I don't know if it's something in his training or just the way his body is built, they say the kid was 6 foot one at one time and then grew to 6'11". You know, maybe that's something to do with his body and his ligaments or something, man, you know, because he's one thing, he's always falling on the ground. And it's funny, I learned that as an offensive lineman years ago. My second in the league, one of the Bengals scouts told me, he said, man, Willie, the great players, the great linemen are never on the ground. I'm like, what do you mean? Like, you're a lineman, we got to block guys to the ground. Well, what he meant was going through traffic and pulling or engaging a guy. When the play is over with, that guy can't throw you on the ground. The great guys seem to always stay on their feet. I mean, watch LeBron. LeBron is rarely on the ground. Jordan, we rarely see Jordan go up in the air, reverse layup, and come down and turn his ankle. For some reason, he just knew how to land. You know what I mean? And AD has a problem. AD has a problem, I think, with him being so tall and so long. And we definitely got to get another two guard. You know, my man McCullen up in Portland, somebody got to come in and be a dominant scorer. Last night, LeBron was tired as hell last night, man. And it showed.
Oh, he was gas, bro.
I felt bad for him, man. Like, damn, like, and the Suns knew it. The Suns played a fast-paced game, and not having that second score, man, you know, hurt him real bad. So
that's okay. You're a Laker fan. You guys got like 300. Oh, you'll be back before you know it.
Like Adam said, everybody comes to LA too. So hopefully next offseason, it's a big offseason.
Oh, they're getting somebody. I guarantee you. If anything, this allows them to go. Yeah, go straight to the front office and go, we need help. And they'll be like, cool.
Exactly.
So look, you mentioned you're from Mobile, Alabama. I know you played at Auburn. And the new head coach down there and the new offensive line coach, Brad Bedell, is a good friend of mine. So I'm excited to see what the Auburn Tigers do down there. We'll keep it basketball here before we get into the football stuff. Excuse me. Did you hear the nickname that Barkley gave Davis on TNT? Speaking of Auburn guys, street clothes,
street
Davis.
Street clothes, bad.
Is that over the line there? Is that a little bit too like right knife from the heart?
That's Chuck, man. If you watch Stephen A. Smith the other day, what Chuck said about him and what Stephen A. said in the whole montage about him, that made AD go out there and play. Like, he couldn't play last night, but hearing Charles Barkley say what he said, and Stephen A. Smith saying, hey, people are starting to question you if you don't go in the court. Like, there was no way he can play last night. Like, but he did that knowing that if he didn't at least try, it'd have been real, real bad for him. Real bad for him. Yeah.
I agree. All right, so let's get into some football here. The great Willie Anderson joins us here on episode 114 of Chesney Unchained at DNVR. Make sure you check it out, dnvr.com. Willie was the 10th overall pick in 1996 of the Bengals, 13-year NFL career, 4-time Pro Bowl, 3-time All-Pro. And look, you played like over 190 games. So we were talking about injuries, and unfortunately, I had a ton of injuries I had to deal with in the NFL, and it kept me from playing for a long time. You stayed relatively healthy. I know your body's got to feel awesome right now, but relatively healthy through your career. Talking about today's modern tackles, you know, and the guys like the Stanleys and the Orlando Brown Juniors and, you know, Eric Fisher tearing his Achilles last year. It's very rare to see guys actually stay healthy now. And, you know, you don't see a lot of Walter Jones or Willie Anderson or Ogdens, guys who just play forever. And it's like it's not even debated. Like, oh, he's going to be there every week. What do you think has changed? Is it a toughness thing? Are guys just not playing unless they're 100%? What do you think's changed in that regard? Is the game different? I mean, I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
What I don't want to sound like is the old man saying that, you know, our time was better. I think with you and I dealing with high school kids, like I see so many high school linemen in the last 10 years that don't play multiple sports. And it seems like, you know, back when I played, like everybody played something. Guys wrestled in all season, played basketball. You know, I know guys that play lacrosse and baseball, and it's certain things that your body gets hardened up doing. Like, and you know, definitely in the NFL, the way they have the offseason set up now is for the players' longevity help. It's probably great that we don't have, you know, to go to OTAs and 3-month offseason of weightlifting how we did back in the days. But I think it also hurts the development of the linemen.
Yes, bad.
Especially for technique wise. You know, my second year in the league, I came in as a right tackle, but ended up playing left tackle my whole rookie year. And they wanted to switch me back to the right side because we had nobody at the Bengals who was big enough to face the left defensive ends back then. So I moved to the right side, and I remember going to Cincinnati for a month with Paul Alexander myself before OTA started in 97. And he and I just worked on techniques that we basically used as a group for the next 12 years. And, you know, it was some things that I did really good that I kind of taught him some things. He taught me some things. And we used those techniques for the next 12 years that even when guys like Levi Jones and Andrew Whitworth came in, they was using those techniques that we worked on in 97 when I was 22 years old. So the amount of time that guys get to stay with their O-line coaches right now is definitely down. There's a different kind of body type of lineman right now. Like, there's no more 340-pound tackles and 340. Like, my last year at the Bengals, I was 340, and Bobby Williams was like 360, my guard. You know what I mean? So guys are a lot leaner now. I think guys are more athletic because the guys they're facing are more athletic. But something has to do with the training problem. I mean, when guys come into to lifting weights and prehabbing and doing things that to take care of themselves before they get hurt, I think it's a real big part of the game that should be looked at, because old school football training, you know, I mean, guys still a lot of offensive linemen are still training the way guys train in the 80s. And I think in learning how to prevent these injuries before they happen, prevent like Achilles injury can 100% be prevented. If you're constantly thinking about, you know, keeping your calves loose, keeping your ankles loose, but that's something that guys have to be inbred into guys. And fortunately for me, I learned that at a later part of my career, how to take care of my body as far as, you know, adjustments and massages, doing stuff like Pilates with a room full of women, my big ass now on the table. And these small girls, they're killing me, bro. I'm like, because I seen a guy by
the name. It's good for you, too.
It's great for you, man. I seen a guy by the name of Reuben Brown, who's a multiple Pro Bowler for. So Rube was on the front cover of the Pilates the shop. And I called Ruben and asked him, he said, man, he said, I'll never lift weights again. I said, why? He said, because I'm getting all my strength training in Pilates and using these machines. And I couldn't believe it. So I started doing that, man, my latter years in the league, and it helped my back, it helped my core, it helped my hips out. And like, it did things for me that weight training couldn't do. Although I needed weight training as a teenager, through college, early part of my career in the NFL. But as you get older and start playing, and you see when you want to play through, you're 30 years old, your training has to change up. You know, like, you're going to ask Andrew Whitworth if he's still training the same way he did at 22.
No.
You can't. You know what I mean? Your body hurts too much. So having ways to find out how to train guys as they mature and get older is a big part of football, I think.
The great Willie Anderson joins us here, episode 114, McChesney Unchained. Make sure you follow Willie at BigWillie7179 on Twitter and Instagram. Willie, you run the Willie Anderson Lineman Academy down in Atlanta. We both work with a bunch of young guys. What is the number one thing that you teach your kids when they walk in, first and foremost, rather not just stance and like effort, but what's the number one thing that you would like to get across to the young offensive linemen out there that are working, other than what you just said, obviously?
Be confident in being a big dude. Like, I've been a big dude all my life. And in society, we're always taught to be, to dumb yourself down. You're too big.
Be nice.
You know what I mean? Be nice and like, fuck that, man. Like, be big and be confident. You know what I mean? Like, I tell kids all the time, I say, look, man, I said right in front of their mom and dad, I say, look, we can train all damn day. Like, I'm not cheap. And we work our ass off for an hour and a half, 2 hours. I said, but none of this don't mean any damn thing if you're afraid. If you're afraid, it doesn't mean a damn thing. If you're not confident, it doesn't mean a damn thing. I tell guys, man, I said, look, man, we go to these camps. So everybody's trained, like, we train really hard to go to these camps and dominate one-on-one. Like,
yeah,
I see you guys do the same thing.
Hey, same shit we're doing, yep.
I watch it. So I said, look, man, we're in shorts and no helmets. It's a dumbass drill. I said, but look, I've been the offensive line coach at Nike with the opening, and they have all these recruiting sites around the circle watching the guys filming. I said, we all know the rule is no bull rushes, no jump set on offensive line. I said, but we all know D lineman gonna bull rush your ass.
Yeah,
when he does, he puts you in your ass. Your only recourse is you must get up and fight that guy. And as a grown man, I don't feel bad telling a kid that either, because we're on the football field.
It's true.
It's true. I said, because they're gonna run that video of your ass all day. You know, I said, that 5-star DN put such and such on his behind. And I say, for your family's sake and your own family's name, you gotta get up and fight that dude. I said, at college camps, your offensive line coach is going to be looking at you to see if you go fight it, because it's certain kind of guys he want in his room. So all this training and stuff can be all pretty. We will have pads on. If we don't train, I watch you all the time. I get crunk up watching your videos, because if you don't have the energy as a player, none of this stuff works. You know what I mean? So if you're a big guy, I teach big guys how to, first of all, move their bodies.
Yeah,
learn to move their bodies and then have that aggressive mindset. So I never have to get mad. I come out the locker room pissed off. You know what I mean?
Fucking man, bro. You know what
I
mean? Yeah.
I'm pissed off already. It's fucking hot. It's gnats outside. My coach hard on me. He is on y'all. Like, I'm not getting my ass cussed. I'm not getting my ass dog cussed out tonight, because you're going hard and I'm going hard. So teach that, man. You know, teaching some kid who's probably not a college athlete. Kid might be a 5'11" guard. Teach him to have confidence in himself and say, hey, man, look, just because a guy's bigger than me doesn't mean he can beat my ass. Like, if I get my 1-2 steps down the ground before he gets going, I have a chance. But that comes from confidence and not being afraid. Now, if you're afraid and you stand in one place and allow a guy 300 pounds to get going, he's going to run your ass over.
Yep.
So teaching that first, man, that mindset, confidence, and the ability to believe in yourself for high school kids is huge, man, because at that level, they all get dogged out. But you and I know, we really are the stars. You know, shit don't work if we don't work. You know what I mean? But in seventh, eighth grade, they used to throw the worst coach on the field as an O-line coach. So a kid gets to ninth grade, if a kid's not a monster-sized kid, he's probably playing freshman football with, you know, one of the head coach's sons coaching the team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, volunteer time. Yeah.
You know, I mean, so by 10th grade, the average kid playing junior varsity, every kid's not a superstar kid starting a 10th grader. So you're playing junior varsity football, and you're building your confidence, but you're not really getting coached all that great. It's because the head O-line coach is coaching the varsity. So I tell parents the same way you and I are doing is every quarterback guy, you know, in 2009, Tom Brady, 09, there was a special on ESPN called the Year of the Quarterback. And it showed Tom Brady's his personal quarterback coach, the guy that died a couple years ago.
Yeah, he was an awful coach.
Yeah, he said in 2009, he said, if your kid doesn't have a personal quarterback coach, he has no chance. And when they said that, that business boomed. It went crazy because you can't learn all the mechanics of the quarterback just only train with your high school coach. Now, you're not training the position off of the line, which is kind of a little bit more taboo to go out for outside teaching because all the O-line coaches are really territorial. Well, at one time, the QB coaches, you know what I mean? The QB coaches were kind of territorial too, but now every quarterback is pushed to go train. Like high school coaches, they push their guys to go train with a trainer because there's so much stuff you have to learn. You can't learn it all in practice, you know, so.
And I truly believe, and I know you believe this too, but that's the way offensive line, defensive line, that's the way it's going. I play both ways, so I've got a very unique perspective on how to coach it, how to teach it, what you're looking at, so on and so forth. And I don't see how, especially in a place like Denver, it's not a hotbed like Atlanta. It's not the South. It's not the SEC. We're in the fucking Pac-12, bro. So, it's different here. There's a lot of folks, and I wanted to get your opinion on this before we talk about the NFL as a whole. There's a lot of folks who think they can buy opportunity rather than, earning it. I'm just going to invest in myself, and I'm going to bust my ass, and I know I can play. I don't need the affirmation of a scholarship or anything else. That will come as I keep working rather than I bought something, and now I expect a scholarship and blah, 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 It doesn't work like that.
So
I get – is it the same mindset down south in Atlanta as it is in Denver, as it is in L.A.? Is it just the culture we live in, I need it right now? Because that doesn't work with football.
It doesn't. And it's funny with football because you see a lot of basketball. Because basketball stuff can happen so fast for a guy. But there's only so many guys playing basketball that's going to make it. I mean, football, your chances are higher, but there's so many people playing. I remember a couple years ago, 2015, I was coaching high school ball, and I went on Huddle. And Huddle said they had 2 million high school kids registered on the Huddle accounts.
Jesus.
I said, damn.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of damn kids. Damn. So, putting the work in, man. I told my son. My son just finished up at Georgia Tech, and I was like, "Look, man, my son was a receiver. I had no clue how to play receiver. You know, I thought all receivers drove off their back leg and their stance. I had no clue. I used to watch videos of Ocho Cinco, my teammate, training receivers. My son played quarterback, DB, and I told him, "Look, man. I'm not paying for you to go to college." He said, "What?" I'm in eighth grade. I paid for my baby sister to go to college. She dropped out. Paid for my nephew. He dropped out. I said, my son, I said, "What I will do, if you want to do this, I'll pay for every damn thing that it'll take for you to get to college to play football. Your tutoring, training, going to camps, buying all these damn videos we bought." You know what I mean? I said, "I'll buy all that stuff there if you want to do it. I helped you." I said, it won't be an expense I spare to help you out because my son didn't grow up playing football because, you know, I didn't want to play football because after I retired, man, this shit is football. It's a brutal sport. And I didn't think my son had the mindset for it. I said, there's no way he's going to have the mindset the way I had the mindset. What I learned, football changed. Football didn't become a kid didn't have to be that brutal how we all was brought up. But the kid did have to work. And I saw kids for the first time. I showed my son in the ninth grade. I seen kids at the gym at 7 a.m. And I would never think football and basketball kids would get up in the morning time going to the gym. I said, that kid became Jaylen Brown. That kid became Colin Sexton. You know what I mean? That kid, I saw the kid at Manhattan, in Atlanta training in 7th, 8th grade at Lifetime Gym in the morning time by themselves. So,
that's why we're up at 5 a.m. in here every day, brother. Every day at 5 a.m.
There you go, man. So I said, man, that's a kind of work. I don't believe God will bless. I tell all kids this. I don't believe God will bless something if you're not obsessed with it. If you're going to casually go by with it, shit's not going to work. Like,
made for you.
We made it because we was obsessed with football. You know,
yes.
I was really obsessed with basketball, but I just couldn't fucking jump no more. I couldn't jump. If I could do a spin move dunk off a vertical, I'll play basketball. But at 6 foot six, you can't dunk off vertical. That's just getting pinned to the backboard. So being obsessed with, man, like I said, I don't believe that God would bless something if you're not obsessed with it. If you don't think about it every damn day of the week, if you're not working on it, you know, I had a friend of mine who trained basketball players. And when guys come in the gym, he asked me, he said, man, what's your goal with basketball? Or NBA. Now, my boy is psychotic. He's from New York, psychotic. He said, NBA. So for real? He's okay. He said, how many times do you go out and shoot a basketball with your dad, your brothers? He said, all your little friends on the sideline right here? Kid may say, 3 days a week. He's like, man, get the fuck out my gym.
Exactly.
Get the fuck out my gym. He said, I tore my Achilles in Coney Island, New York. I played basketball every fucking day. And I didn't make it. And you think you're going to play 3 days a week? You're going to train 3 days a week and go to the NBA? Man, get the fuck out my gym.
Exactly.
And but he was right, though. It's crazy. He's telling the kids, but he's right, though. Like, you can't say, I'm going to think about something 3 days a week, and I expect to get to the highest level of it. Where there's guys out, like you said, in New York, dribbling the basketball every damn day on the subways, thinking they're, you know, in their mindset playing the game. And with us football players, it's so much stuff you got to go through to make it to that level. If you can't handle tough things, you can't handle tough talking, it's going to be hard because
it'll be real hard.
We got to go through 3 years of football in college. You know, college football coaches are all psychomaniacs, making a lot of money.
Yes.
They got wives. They want their jobs. And it's very, very competitive. And if you think your ass want to go to some of these big schools, these power five coaches want players that's ready to play, who can take hard work, tough criticism. And it's a lot, man. So your mindset has to be of a worker. I mean,
grunt.
There you go.
All day, every day. The great Willie Anderson joins us here, episode 114 of Chesney Unchained. A couple more questions here before we get you out of here. Willie, thank you so much for taking the time today to spit some truth. Bro, you're talking to him over here sweating. My palms are sweating. I'm ready to run through a fucking wall, bro. So, how do you feel about 17 and 18 games in the NFL? I'm not playing anymore, so I think it's awesome. And then... Do you like Mahomes coming out saying he wants to go 20-0, Tampa Bay, everybody talking about them being 20-0? Like, do you really think that it's going to be Kansas City, Tampa Bay again, or is there true parity in the National Football League in your opinion?
I'm a big fan of Patrick Mahomes. And we said that, like, every person I've known in the last 25 years that came out and said publicly what their goal is going to be, shit, tragic happens. Like, no one ever when my teammate Rudy Johnson came out and said, I'm gonna rush 1,800 yards. I thought, oh man, you just jinxed yourself. Like, cut that shit out, man. Don't say it. It's the football gods were not allowed to happen. Like, no one's going to. It can't happen, bro. Like, of course you want to win every damn game, but you know, this schedule's gonna be for fans like us. Like I said, I love football, man. I love watching football from Thursday to fucking Monday night. Yeah. But I do know. I remember the first time I played a Thursday night game. I was in my damn 30s, and I felt like rigor mortis had set in my body in the second quarter. I couldn't move, dog. Like after the game, I went in the cold tub. There's no luck. After the game, I went and set my whole body in the cold tub because on Thursday, I'm still hurting from last Sunday.
Exactly.
Like that's why I retired because I was in Baltimore my last year, my 13th year in Baltimore. Taking pain pills and fucking Toradol for practice. I told Isaac Newton, I said, Isaac, I can't do it, man. And he put his head down and started shaking his head. He said, man, he said, Willie, I understand. He said, because I got some of my boys, Isaac Newton for the GM of the Ravens.
Yeah. Damn,
he said, man. Some of my boys played this game too long and now they can't take care of themselves right now at my age. So he said, man, I get it, man. You know, so that game gonna be, you know, the good thing for them though, the practices are not that crazy.
Yeah, practices are not anything. They're t-shirts.
I've been in training camp the last couple of years with teams. I'm like, yo, this it? Like,
this is it? All you're doing today?
Like, remember back in the days how violent goal line practice were?
Oh my God, man. I don't remember. Like, I remember my last year, like the 15th week of the season in full pads on Wednesday, like half pads Thursday. And then shells Friday just for 9-on-7. And then we can take them off. And I was like, we get to take off our shoulder pads.
Hey, grown men happy as hell. Like,
yeah, I'd be like, no shoulder pads. Wow.
fans don't know how giddy big grown ass men get just to feel better during the season. If coach say, okay, we win this game, pass off the mark. Guys are having full out meetings like, yo, man, don't fuck up. Don't fuck up.
We got to win, dog. I don't want to wear pads on Wednesday. Please fucking win. Hey, so let me ask you this question. If we're talking about 17 and 18 games and we're reverting back to, you know, bodies being broken down and what happens to big guys and all football players, really, don't you think it's time for our weak-ass players union to, like, demand that we get lifetime health care? If we're going to play 17 and 18 games, every single vested player in the past needs to be on lifetime health care, and every single player moving forward needs to be on lifetime health care. That's all I'm looking for. Just can I not pay $3,000 a fucking month just to get insurance because my body's broke down from the job I had?
Exactly. Say the part again. Weak-ass players union. I guess
weak.
It's a damn shame, man. It's terrible. Like, folks don't understand that it's terrible. Like, it's really terrible. And it's like they're even afraid to even ask the question of that shit. Like, you know, and like even bring up at the draft a couple of years ago, the Bengals had me come up and announce their second round pick, and all the former players got a meeting. There was two groups got a meeting with Roger Goodell, and you see all these great players, man. Ed Too Tall Jones, Carl Elder, all these guys in Hall of Famers, man. Some guys on walkers, some guys just knees just crumbling, man. And in the meeting, they asked Roger Goodell about health insurance, and Roger said, "Well, that's a union question." And I said, "Well, when the hell you think this guy is 75 years old going to ask you, bro? Like, he going to ask you why can't you billionaires take care of guys like him?" Who set this league up for greatness? And you watch that. You watch these guys on walkers and shaking, walking around. These guys are legends. And especially the guys pre-93, before the bargain agreement came about, they got shitted on terrible. So Roger asked around the room. He asked around the room and said, "How many guys with a lot of kids play football?" And because my son's already playing already, if I had known this, I tried everything in my power. My son played basketball. I was one of three players in a room of 38 guys. This guy was like, hell no, my son not playing. Wow. Because they understand that their son playing a business that don't love them. Like, we love this game, man. We love this game. Like, we give our hearts this game. And we all so crazy. We'll go do this shit again, knowing that it's crazy right now.
You are correct.
They expect that, though. They know that. They know we love this game, man. They know we're gladiators and warriors. And we'll go do it again. But they also prey on that, and it's things that they can do to make guys' life after football better. Oscar Robertson, great NBA player. He started the Players Union for the NBA. And go and look at the things he did when he first became the president of the union. He made sure guys for a lifetime would be taken care of. Like those guys' post-NBA careers, their benefits are great, man. Like, our NFL, no, our 401k is great, probably one of the best in the whole country. But the insurance the guys got to go through, and I mean,
it is a travesty, dog.
It's a travesty, bro. Like, it's a travesty. Like, you see, I mean, Johnny Unitas, man. This man couldn't even hold a pen to write his name before he died, and they couldn't give him care. Like, he couldn't get lifetime. Like, guys who set this league up, this man. This golden arm Johnny Unitas had, he couldn't even hold a pen to write his name his last couple of years. And it's bad, man. And you know, I don't know if our union is on the side of these owners or don't want to rock the boat. It's bad every year. So, you know, fans don't know that because, you know, I think as a whole, we as players should talk about it a whole lot more. And I personally think we need shit, we need Congress to come in and negotiate with these owners instead of our players union, because we get screwed every damn negotiations. We get screwed. So
last question I got for you here, Willie, and thank you so much for coming on the show and speaking some truth, brother. Remember, you can follow Big Willie at BigWillie7179 on Twitter and Instagram. And if you're down south or anywhere, honestly, check out the Willie Anderson Lineman Academy. It's incredible. He does a great job down there with working with all those guys. I played defensive line my whole life until I got moved to guard when I was in the NFL. And I used to love watching the pass rushers when I was growing up. I was watching your era. I didn't get to the NFL until 2005. Bruce Smith, Reggie White, you know, Jason Taylor, guys that you played against at that level. Who was the guy that gave you the most problems just on a week in, week out basis playing and blocking that guy off the edge?
Week in and week out, like I played.
I mean, he only gave up 16 sacks in like 15 years. So people didn't give you that much of an issue. But who would you say that when you walked out on the field on the gridiron, you were lining up against Bruce or Reggie? Maybe not give you problems, but was it different lining up against those guys than just some dude playing defensive end?
Yeah, because those guys to me seem like they all had superpowers, bro. To block Bruce Smith and. I played Bruce Smith when I was 23. I'm sorry, Reggie White. I played Reggie White when I was 23 years old in 98. He was 36. Well, he led the league his last year at Green Bay. He led the league in sacks. And he was only playing like half the downs, bro. So he stayed fresh. And the previous week there, just played Tampa Bay. And he played against a guy by the name of Jason Oldham, who played at Florida when I was at Auburn.
Okay.
Jason had won SEC Lineman of the Year. And, man, he put Jason on his head about three times, bro. Like, and Chris Berman, I came home that night. We played somebody the previous week. I rushed home because I knew the next week we got Reggie. I wanted to see the highlights from the game. And I'll never forget. I'm in my living room watching the game. And I said, Lord have mercy. I got to block this dude next week. Now, I grew up loving Reggie White. You know, start looking to God and Christ because of Reggie White. Say he was a preacher. I was a Reggie White fan as a kid, bro. So that whole week, my coach, you know, Bruce Kyle, I'm going to hold my words what he said. But he told the press, so I told the press, I said, yeah, I have a pretty good plan against Reggie. And my head coach is going to say, well, everybody got a good plan against Reggie until they play Reggie. And I said, what?
How motivating was that, brother?
I was mad as shit, like. I said, oh, so the whole building thing, I'm about to get put in my head. But I blocked Reggie, God bless the dead, rest in peace, the greatest guy. I blocked him, bro, shut him out. But dude was running to me, and my fucking skeleton was hurt. bro, he was shaking my, like, I'll show you videos. I have some videos on my Instagram of me blocking him. Like, because I'm a big dude, it don't look like he's hitting me that hard because I'm a big dude, but bro, my skeleton was hurt. And after the game, I stayed hurt for at least 6 weeks because I'll tell you a funny story. So what they would do, they would have Seth Joyner on the outside.
Okay.
Off the end, blitzing to keep you from chipping Reggie, right? So we had a fullback by the name of Brian Mills played at Penn State. And I said, Mills, look, when Seth Joyner, the linebacker, don't stand behind me. You know, backs, they get nervous.
You're going to
get real close to the line. I said, bro, if you trip me, Reggie's going to kill the fucking quarterback. And what he did, they blitzed him. He stood behind me. I stepped on his foot. I started to fall back, and Reggie grabbed me. He grabbed him and ran us both back. The QB was Neil O'Donnell. Picked us up. And threw it on top of the quarterback. Boom. I land down. I put my wrist down to hold my wrist like a dumbass. And all three of them fell on my wrist. I thought for sure my wrist was shattered. But I had a cast in my arm for the next 4 weeks, 5 weeks. Like, he beat me up, dog. Like
it's Reggie.
I've never faced a guy that was stronger than me. That at any time, like, his favorite move, as we all know, is that hump move.
Hump, yep.
He would do that hump so smooth. Like, most guys got to wind it up. Reggie just put his arm up under your armpit and lift you up the ground. So the whole game, I'm sitting inside the whole game, like all this pressure on my damn left knee, trying to hold him down for humping me. And he's laughing. And every time you say, big fella, you feel it coming, don't you? You feel it coming, don't you? Hey, so look at this. Look at my teammates say, hey, man, whatever you do, don't curse at him.
He gets real mad if you curse at him.
I say, well, you know what I'm gonna do? I won't say shit to him. I ain't responding to him. He'll talk to me. I won't say nothing to him. Because, you know, my whole thing with great guys, I want to shut you out, but I don't want to hype you up. You know what I mean? I'll try to pancake you and fuck you up and help you up. Say, man, you all right? You good?
You good?
Right. You good? Hey, we good, man?
You're doing a great job today, by the way.
Hey, good job, man. Hey, but every time, though, I'm trying to hurt you every damn time, though. But I don't want you to know it because you'll get hyped up and try to play hard. You know what I mean? So that's the old Jordan mentality. It's a Jordan wanted everybody to stay calm again. And he made guys think he was their friends. In the meantime, he killed them. Right. That's what it is, man.
Great Willie Anderson joins us here. Willie, thank you so much for coming on the show, episode 114. Check out Willie's Lineman Academy down there in Atlanta, at BigWillie7179 on Twitter and Instagram. We'll have this posted up here later, and I'll send it to you for sure. Willie, thank you so much, man, brother.
Thank you, bro.
Stay up down there. We'll talk soon. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, bro. Thank you.
Later. All right.